Also, let me say, I'm sorry, I know I'm going to be a little bit of an asshole here, but I'm kind of a little bit of an asshole as a mentor. I'm like, oh, okay, so this is your dream. Gotcha, gotcha. Why aren't you doing that? You know, like, you know, like that's just a little bit of who I am as a mentor. Up, hackers. So Zero Trust World just happened and ThreatLocker dropped some pretty cool stuff. My favorite of the bunch was ThreatLocker Cloud Control, and I'll tell you why, okay? So when you're trying to hack an organization nowadays, what's kind of like the go-to approach? Well, for most, it's going to be set up Evil Nginx and send out a bunch of phishing emails, right? That way you don't have to worry about two-factor authentication or anything like that, because Evil Nginx is just going to let them put in their password, their 2FA, and then just hand you back a session token to interact with Microsoft 365. So ThreatLocker realized this was a problem, and so what they decided to do was build Cloud Control, which uses the ThreatLocker agent to sync into Microsoft Cloud Conditional Access a list of approved IP addresses from which a user can connect, right? So then an attacker gets that token that they stole via Evil Nginx, they try to use it to interact with Microsoft 365, and boom, they're burned because they're not coming from a permitted network and they lose access. It's pretty sick. It's a great solution to the problem. So definitely check it out, ThreatLocker Cloud Control. All right, back to the show. Alrighty, my man. Here we go. We got the studio set up. This is the first time we've done a podcast in the new studio live, so I'm excited. For everyone who doesn't know, this is So Sakaguchi. He's one of my best friends from when I lived in Japan, and has become a hacker, a full-time bug bounty hunter over the past couple of years. And that's been a really fun story. So he's actually in town doing some hacking with me, just visiting, that sort of thing. And I figured we would do a little podcast to sort of talk about your experience as a becoming a full-time bug bounty hunter from zero before. And zero. Yeah, and I think it was episode 40, if the notes are correct, back in 2023, that you joined the podcast, came on the podcast with Kodai. And we started talking about, you know, bug bounty mentorship. So we'll do a little bit of that today. We're going to do a live mentorship session and just kind of do a check-in. And then we'll kind of hit some of the other stuff that, as you've grown as a hacker, has become more relevant to this podcast. So, dude, I'm so excited to have you on here, like as an as a guest.
I mean, as a guest,
as a guest. Like we were sort of debating before the podcast started. Like, you know, yes, we could take an angle for this podcast where we could talk about you mostly as a mentee and do like a mentee check-in, and we will do that. But also, I'm looking at this stuff here, and this is good shit, dude. This is like, this is stuff that I would invite you on the podcast to talk about. So, this is the first time that I'm going to have you do this. But, you know, when we have somebody on the podcast, they have to prove their worth first.
Okay.
And they have to present a bug.
Present a bug.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, but, and I'll tell you this, you know, obviously doing this in English is a gift to me. So thank you. So, and because of that, and also because I have a life dream of doing a podcast in Japanese, we are going to switch at the end of this episode into Japanese, and I will also present a bug so that I will understand the difficulty of what you're about to go through.
That's kind of more scary to me too, because you know, I kind of have to lead the, you know, podcast for you. So.
But you also do, what, Bug Bounty JP podcast? Is that what it is?
But that's where, like, there's another guy leading the conversation.
Yeah, Morioka-san.
Yeah. I just talk, so it's a little different.
Too different. All right, let's jump in. Which bug you want to start with? You got a Google and a Facebook bug, which I think is great. So which one you want to start with?
I think probably maybe with Facebook bug, because I think it's
okay.
A lot simpler.
Yeah, let's do it.
So the Facebook bug is, it's like, I'm a little scared with like presenting this bug, because, you know, I've seen many people present their bugs here. And this is cool because I found it on Facebook, but it's not too complicated. But anyways, so, I found this bug. This is a store DOM XSS that I found on one of their open source project, Xcasual. So the reason I started to look into this is, so for one, I think it was Space Raccoon.
Yeah.
Who found some pretty sick, like, clickboard.
Yeah, was it like, paste, like a clipboard. Yeah. XSS.
And he found, like, pretty cool XSS, like, probably 3-4 years ago,
mm-hmm.
and made a blog post about it. Mm-hmm. So I knew the product. And then, like, last year, I read somebody's blog post. I forgot whose blog post, but it was also about XSS on XCasual.
Mm-hmm.
And that...
So clearly they have a problem with XSS. Yeah.
And that one, compared to Space Reference blog, was a great read, but at the same time, wasn't technically as complex as Space Reference one. I was, like, actually kind of impressed or surprised that, you know, Facebook has this level of problem. It's like, you know, like...
It gave you a little bit of hope, right?
Yeah. And then, and plus, I forgot the context, but I met, like, a manager of Meta Bhagwani program back in, like, last December, because he came to Japan for his work. Cool. And he was like, oh, Facebook is not as hard as you think. And I'm like, well, I don't know about
that. I doubt that.
Yeah, but, you know, that was right when I saw the XCasual blog, and I kind of wanted to do a bit of a source code review.
Mm.
So I was like, maybe I'll give it a try. And the bug was, so stored DOM XSS for one.
Mm.
And so I started to look into just all the, like, syncs where they do, like, string concatenation.
Mm.
It doesn't happen a lot of times, but I just found one sync where they do a bit of string concatenation when they, like, convert SVG to XCasual. That XCasual is a, to give it a bit of context, it's like whiteboard app.
Yeah, it's like you can. It's a web app where you can, like, draw different shapes and, like, create graphics essentially, right?
And then within that app, you've got many different, like, shapes, graphics that you can use, and you can import them. And they have, like, .xcasual extension too, and the string concatenation I found was where they convert SVG into XCasual extension.
Mm.
And first I wasn't sure, like, where they were, like, using it, but I was like, so let's check out, like, where they're using it. And I found that, it seems like they allow user to, how to explain it? Like, they allow user to export, like, import their own,
drawing
object by specifying like host, or like I forgot the gray parameter's name, but like something like host gray parameter. So if you do like import /import ?host equal yourdomain.com, and if you host the XCasual object there with SVG and they import it and then make it into XCasual object.
Okay. So there's a /import endpoint. You can provide a host for it.
I'm not sure if it was a /import, but like something.
Sure, something like that. Yeah. And then it will reach out to your host, grab, is it just any file type or is it specifically for SVGs?
I think it was, I should have reviewed that earlier.
You're
but I think there's like a few types and then like depending on like the content and also like content type, like they'll like triage it.
And then they'll sort it into a different XCasual object flow.
Yeah.
And so going back just real quick, I wanted to go back to what you were saying before with regards to string concatenation. So you said you were looking for string concatenation. Were you looking for like specifically HTML like strings and then concatenating it with a variable, or what was your approach to find that sync in the first place?
So it's kind of complicated, but so basically for the, so they're essentially a whiteboard object, whiteboard app. Mm-hmm. And on whiteboard, everything is canvas, right. Like HTML canvas.
Sure, stuff. Canvas,
so
yeah.
There's no SVG, like there's no possibility for XSS. But for like, they have this library feature where they can, you can store your own or like, you know, imported objects and then put it into your canvas. Into your whiteboard, and in whiteboard nothing happens, but within library or like within preview, which is a different feature, but you know,
right,
some future uses like SVG and such, like temporarily to display like those objects and such. So I was like, I need to find place where like this, you know, this happens. And yeah, that was my approach.
That was the approach. Okay. So then you find the place where the string concatenation occurs. You figure out a way to load your malicious file into the person's account. So if you just make them hit that import, you know, CSERF essentially,
yeah,
it'll grab the object from your host and then just kind of plop it into their whiteboard.
No, prop into their library.
Their library.
So okay. It doesn't trigger right off the bat.
Mm.
But once they open library, like every time they open library, that like object is like made into like X-Casual object with HTML without canvas tag because it's not whiteboard.
Right.
Yeah. Then it's not whiteboard. It's not library.
Ah.
And then they trigger XSS.
Okay. So, you know, when it's in the whiteboard, it's in a canvas, so no XSS.
No XSS. But
when they go to the library, there's like a preview or something like that of that. And that uses a different format, like a SVG or something like that to display it. And that's where you get the XSS. Mm. Nice, dude. Very solid. All right.
I don't actually remember like too much of the details. So maybe something was wrong about it, but I think that's pretty much it.
That sounds about right. Now, was it, you know, at the end of the day, were you able to specify arbitrary HTML tags? Were you just injecting like an onload handler or into the SVG tag or what?
Just like image, like on error. Like,
sort of thing.
That works.
Clean payload.
Yeah, I didn't check like any restriction there, but that worked.
Yeah. Wow, dude, very nice. All right. Well, see, you know, but think about it, man. You were saying like you read Space Raccoon's blog and you read this other person's blog about Excalibur and you're like, oh, you know, this doesn't seem so bad, right? And then you had the confidence to go find it and you get a bounty and you find a cool, you know, vulnerability, right?
Mm.
You're doing the same thing for all the guests now. You know, they say, oh yeah, there was an import parameter and then it just, you know, populates this SVG, you know, on the library page. That's that doesn't seem so bad, you know?
But then, So if you say that, like, I have to do the same thing as all the other guests is, like, I said it like as if it was easy, but it was, like, before finding this sync, I think it took me like 4 days finding that thing. Like, this turns out to be not vulnerable. And then, like, on 4th or 5th day, I was like, oh, why does this sync?
Yeah, we just had this earlier, or like, what, yesterday, right? You spent like 4 hours. I'm sorry to call you out, but we were hacking together yesterday. And there was like, you know, there was a post message that we saw come through on one of these targets. And you know, we love to see a post message that contains a raw HTML string. Mm. Like, doesn't that just like get the blood flowing a little bit? That's like
exactly, we saw it.
Yeah. And so like we get excited. We're like, oh, this is going to be XSS. You know, they got a campaign going on. This is going to be easy money. And so like goes through this whole process to like build an HTML page and like do this handshake with the post message. And then we get to the end of it and it's like, what is it, like React?
And they use React to build, like, rebuild HTML
based
off of my, like, raw HTML.
And there's nothing we can do about that. You know, like, it's just...
I won't give up yet.
Oh, my God. Well, we recently also, you know, we'll talk about this as well, but we also had a couple syncs sort of like this in a Google bug recently, where we had a post message to HTML injection on the page. But when you get stuck in these like React sanitize or Angular sanitize functions, it's like if you can bypass Angular or React sanitize, then that's the bigger problem, you know, like you don't need to worry about reporting your little post message bug. You need to report Angular sanitize bypass, right? But it was interesting because, you know, just like you said, you're not giving up. That episode that we did with Kevin Mizu and Kevin Mizu's write up recently on like how to bypass DOM purify or via misconfigurations and stuff like that was really eye opening for me on how to attack HTML sanitizers and just try to take advantage of the fact that if there is any modification that is done to the string post sanitization, that you're messing with it, right? You know, you're messing with the integrity of that sanitize. So that's one of the things I always go to look for. So I won't blame you because I also went down the rabbit hole of auditing Angular sanitize on this Google bug. But yeah, it seems pretty hopeless whenever you're in a sort of Angular React sanitize situation.
You have to say so,
Yeah. All right, so that was one. Mm-hmm. You got to pass. But actually, number two. We're actually going to do two bugs today. This bug was actually a collaboration between So and I on a Google target. And we may have to cut this segment right now. We'll see. It, you know, if
If we do, I'm sorry. Hopefully we'll get the chance to talk about it sometime. But I guess we'll cut now if we do not get permission to disclose this. All right. So if you're still listening to this, we do have permission to disclose it, which rocks. So so let's go ahead and jump into it. Do you want to tag team this one, or you want to take a shot at it, or what?
I think I'll try to explain first, and then
all right.
you jump in if my explanation is not clear.
All right, yeah? Hit us. Yeah.
Yeah. So the thing we found was wait, I'm not sure how much detail we can go into, but
don't say where we found it. Yeah. You can say Google and then technical details, but don't say what product we found it in.
Yeah. So the first, Justin found some like interesting feature in Google. Like that's like pretty much, that's used pretty much everywhere in Google products, like regardless of like google.com, youtube.com, like, you know, different domains. And so this is so hard to do, like.
All right. Why don't you let me cue it up?
Okay.
And then you talk about the technical details. Okay. Cause it is a little bit difficult when you're trying not to disclose some information. So this is a Google, this is a component used by a bunch of Google products, like you said, on YouTube, on Google, on, you know, any of their domains. And for the business use case, which we can't say, it is essential that it be able to be used on all of these different domains. And it creates an iframe, and it does some stuff with that iframe. And what we are trying to take advantage of here is that this product has to be so versatile, so universally accessible. Because it makes doing origin checks really difficult, and allows us to sort of insert ourselves as a parent, or as a, you know, as a window in the same tab group as the specific frame, which allowed us to get access to the post message handlers, which allowed us to send some post messages. So then we've sort of teed it up there. Now you can kind of try to take it and explain some of the technical details.
Yeah, so basically, like Justin said, it's like an iframe.
Yeah,
where it receives some information from Google related domains, Google related services, I'd say.
It's like a configuration post message.
Yeah, right? And then based off of those information received, the iframe sends a few requests to Google API to send stuff and such. And that's like the kind of overview, how I see it. And so we found this post message on the Franz Rosen post message tracker.
Shout out to Franz.
And shout out to Franz Rosen. Mm-hmm. And that post message content included like a bunch of different stuff that looks like a component of HTTP request.
Yeah, and I think what was interesting about this is and you did a really good job of it as we were building it out, because it was protobuf format, right? It didn't have like keys and values. It was just like an array with values.
Yeah.
And then,
oh yeah. Yeah.
You know, and I kind of let you be and work on this for a little bit while I was working on this other bug.
Yeah.
And then I came back and man, I just loved to see it. You had, you know, you had a JavaScript snippet sort of built out. And, you know, where you'd send the post message and then next to each field, you broke it out into a different line. And then you had like a comment next to it and says, okay, this one does this. Yeah. This one is like that. And you just sort of identified the flow of each one of those arguments, which ended up being essential to the actually exploiting the vulnerability.
Yeah. So anyways.
Yeah.
So like Justin said, I kind of tried to find like, understand how each component works, how each component is being used. And yeah, like you said, it wasn't initially clear that it's something to build HTTP requests. But as I go through the JavaScript, I just realized, oh, this is, you know, this is HTTP path, or this is, you know, body, and this is a query parameter. So what we found out is with a lot of restrictions, we could potentially send post message from our site to that iframe. In a way that iframe sends like partially controlled HTTP requests to Google API. And one good thing about for us is that some of the things that we don't have control on include authorization header. So for that, like partially control request includes victim's authorization header. Mm-hmm. And the other thing that was interesting was if the request is successful, the response is sent back by the post message.
You love to see it. Yeah. You freaking love to see it, man.
So what we can do is like kind of see surf thing, but at the same time, we can see the response back too.
Love it.
With victim's authorization header sent. Mm. So that was our attack vector. Is like we try to find, to hit an endpoint that the response with like user's information or something like that. Mm-hmm. And we read that. That was our attack vector. Mm. And then, yeah, that's overview.
And then we sort of hit into a roadblock with this domain validation
thing. Yeah. Right? Yeah. So that was the first block, which is a domain validation. Mm. So the first time I saw this post message listener, there's no origin check. Mm. So I was like, okay, so, you know, I don't even have to think about that. So I'll just think about the request content. And then once I figured out the request content, I realized that they're actually sending two requests instead of one request. Mm. And the first request is like slash domain, question mark, domain equal your domain, like origin of post message. Mm. Mm. And then second domain is like the one we can read the response.
Yeah.
And now apparently they were using that first request as a domain check.
Right. So essentially, they had, instead of doing like the domain check at the post message level, they were taking our origin, sticking it in a domain parameter, and then hitting an API to tell them whether or not we should be allowed to access this or be able to send this post message, right?
Which kind of makes sense too, because like we mentioned, this like component was used everywhere, not just on Google.com. Mm. So, you know, you want to keep it like versatile, like easy to configure. So they might wanted to configure this way instead of, you know, checking origin.
Sure.
And so we hit that block. But one thing I realized that is for the first request, not second request, the first request for domain check, we have just a bit of control on that first request too, which is query parameter. Mm. So we could specify query parameter. Mm. So like, you know, obviously the first thing I was thinking was like, well, maybe if I specify domain equal google.com, they might override like domain equal my domain.com, and then they might give me, you know, they might pass a check.
Right. So it would become like a request to slash check domain.
Oh, yeah.
And then it would say question mark domain equals google.com. That's the one we specified.
And they hash.
And then, oh, you were going to try to truncate the.
Yeah.
So put like a hashtag so it truncates off the and. Domain equals attackersite.com.
Yeah, so I didn't explain this well, but like, yes. So in that post message, we could have just specified the HTTP request query parameter key value pair.
Yeah, sure.
And those things come before the like domain equal mydomain.com. So I was like, if we can put hash in it, we could override it.
Mm, truncate the path.
Yeah.
Or the query parameters. Yeah.
Yeah. And then still we can send this request and we might potentially be able to, you know, exfiltrate or something. Mm. But that turned out to be, that didn't work.
Right.
And the reason for that is, so we read the JavaScript and they're doing more thorough approach of just taking out all the key value parameter and create an array, like array and object. And then at the end of the array, they have their, you know, check thing domain equal mydomain.com. Mm-hmm. And then so they put all of them like one by one. And during that process, because domain equal mydomain.com is at the last, that always overrides like even if I attempt like domain equal google.com before. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
like,
so they set them in a map, right? So domain it, and then you know the value.
Yeah.
And they parse all of our parameters. And then at the end they say
they add
override whatever is there with domain equals whatever.
Yeah. Right? So yeah. Mm. So we could send like something invalid equal something invalid and domain equal google.com, domain equal mydomain.com.
Yeah.
But we couldn't override that domain parameter.
Right. Okay. So we're still stuck there. So yeah. How did you get around it? So
that was it wasn't like, you know, like strategical. Like thoughtful approach. I just, you know what? I'm just gonna you know, dump all the like characters using a like work computer and put that thing right before D of domain and right after N of domain.
Yeah.
And see if those will pass.
Because we tried also like capitalization and stuff like that, right? But the capitalization wouldn't let us get by it. It was like lowercasing everything or something like that.
Yeah,
yeah.
And I was kind of, at that point, I was like, that was like a hopeless like attempt.
Yeah.
I know that's not going to work, but I'm just going to do it. And then when I see that, when I saw the like intruder history, I saw some of them being successful. Like including one like dot domain equal like google.com in which case they send like dot domain equal google.com and domain equal mydomain.com.
Right.
And I don't know what the heck happens on back end, but like if I send that like three times or four times and then like one of them succeeds.
Dude.
Like for like whatever reason.
Dude, I remember when you found that and then I think it was actually like literally right here in this exact spot. So is like sitting over there. He says, Justin, I got it.
No,
like,
you were upstairs.
I was upstairs. Yeah. I run down here. You show me it. And then we just start jumping up and down and screaming. And like, no way that works. And it's crazy to me, man, that it worked like, what was it? Like 30% of the time?
Mm-hmm.
Like there was some weird load balancer in there where it was like, okay, I'm one of these like four servers or whatever is gonna strip the dot character from the beginning of the
program. Yeah,
super weird.
Yeah, I have no idea what happened back end, but it worked.
Yeah,
the problem is, you know, we don't know yet what we can do with, you know, us being able to send partially controlled parameter to specific Google private API,
right?
Because we haven't figured that part out. Like, right. Heck, you know?
So it's not like a super win yet, but that was still pretty exciting.
Yeah, so it took us like 3 days to come to like domain check thing.
Yeah.
But because of 3 days work, we were so excited and like, oh, we gotta push through all the, you know, blocks to come in the future. So that was the first block.
Mm.
And what was the
So from there, then we established that we were able to communicate with this post message handler and trigger these requests to the API that we wanted to do and get the responses back, right?
Yeah, if the request is successful.
Right.
So, yeah, then at that point, so because of some restriction, we couldn't bypass. There are only like a few API, Google API we could hit.
Mm.
And we kind of enumerate all the query using like a Google discovery document.
Mm-hmm.
And so we pretty much found nothing, except one API GET-based request returning email.
Mm-hmm.
And that thing is our request is POST-based.
Mm.
And we couldn't change POST to GET. Mm. That was something we couldn't control, right? And then...
Yeah. And then from there, I think, you know, since it was POST, we had to figure out a way to hit these different API endpoints though, right? Mm-hmm. First, before we did that. And if I recall correctly, that happened via a client-side path traversal.
Oh yeah, yeah. Yeah. So that's another block I completely skipped here. like mentioned, like some of the things could be configurable.
Mm.
Some of the things in HTTP request are configurable, including HTTP path.
Mm.
So like part of HTTP path.
Yeah, just one segment.
Yeah, one like ID is something we had control on.
Mm.
And they are using XHR on the client side, and they don't have any validation before that. So we could inject like ././/. To traverse back to the root.
Mm.
So which allowed us to send pretty much whatever to whatever endpoints.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have control on host, but we had control on like any, like the path being sent.
Any of the paths.
So that's why we could keep arbitrarily, endpoint of given. Yeah.
But then we're still stuck with the post request. We looked at the discovery documents, couldn't find anything we could do with the post request, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So then what happened?
Then like there, like, we started to do some like hopeless attempts again. Like I think I spent like 4 hours on that.
Yeah.
And one thing I found, which turned out to be absolutely useless, is like I found like this X method override header.
Yeah.
If I send it, like Google will accept, like if I send post request with X method override header being get,
yeah,
they will say as get. So I was like, oh, if I can specify this header, then like that we are victorious. The thing is, we can't add any parameter like header.
Yeah.
That wasn't something we have control on such. So that took us like what, like probably pretty much a day.
Yeah. A day on that, I think. Yeah.
And then there I almost completely gave up there. And then Justin moved on to a completely different target but Google, right?
Yeah, but I was still looking at Google, yeah.
And then I think I still remember it was like 11 o'clock, like in the morning.
Yeah.
Justin was like suddenly you were like, oh, I got this cell. And then, you know, what he found is like, it was RPC?
Yeah. So essentially what it turned out to be was that almost all of Google's APIs are accessible via multiple ways. You can hit, you know, the path directly like a normal REST API, you know, /API/whatever, and then hit those endpoints with get, post, whatever. Or you can use the RPC interface.
Yeah.
And the RPC interface has some quirks to it, but one of the things that works really well for us is that it's all post-based, right?
Yeah, but the other thing that doesn't work for us is they use a little bit different protobuf content type.
Yeah.
So we actually tried that, right?
Yeah,
we've already tried hitting RPC endpoints. Didn't work because content types are different. That's like, you know, 3 days before you scream
right
here.
Right.
Yeah.
So what was the final discovery then?
That was your discovery. So
okay. Right. Final discovery was this, guys, was that on some Google APIs that utilize RPC, there is a header that you or a query parameter that you can provide called $HTTP headers with a capital H for headers. And what that allows you to do is just specify arbitrary HTTP headers. Which was exactly what we needed. Mm-hmm. So, you know, putting that whole chain together, what we ended up doing was changing the content type then to the correct protobuf content type, hitting an RPC endpoint with a post request, which is exactly how it's supposed to
and
be.
And the path traversal.
Right? And the path traversal, right? And to hit the RPC endpoints. And then we specified, we also had full control of the body of the request from the post or from the post message.
Yeah, yeah.
So then putting it all together, bypass the dot domain check, hit the client-side path traversal, traverse to the RPC call, specify the HTTP headers to convert the content type to protobuf, and then send protobuf in the body to send a valid protobuf request to the API, which then gets piped back out via post message to our handler.
Yeah, and then that handler obviously sends the response back to our site via post message. So really users some information. Yeah.
We were able to then use that to do a bunch of things. One, you know, we could leak some PAI about the user. We could also modify, like make the user send a specific type of object to the API that would change their account. And we could also extract a bunch of data, not only about the user, but about these objects that they have in this API. So that was a really fun bug.
Yeah.
Dude, give me some, man. That was a blast.
That's
very fun collab. Okay, so we took some time on that one. But let's go ahead and move to some of these other sections that we have in the doc for today. You want to do the live mentorship session now, or do you want to talk about Reflector first?
Live mentorship
session. Let's do that one first. Okay, all right. So let me kind of set the stage for this a little bit. Like I've said before, I do some occasional bug bounty mentorship, but it's pretty much only for people that I know in real life, and or are, you know, providing a service to the podcast or, you know, something like that. There's some other exchange of services. Shout out to Andrew Ninjeter, who did my tattoo for me in exchange for some mentorship. And when we do these mentorship sessions, a lot of the time, what I'm spending time doing is figuring out, you know, what my mentees want to do with their bug bounty career and helping them get there. And it doesn't necessarily have to be, you know, bug bounty is the full goal, as we'll talk about later today. It could also be bug bounty as a stepping stone to get somewhere else in your career. So I don't know. So we haven't sort of compared notes on this in a little while. And even though you're here in person, like things have been really busy lately. So we haven't had the chance to sit down much. So I'm glad we're getting the chance to do that now on the pod. I guess 5 years ago, you were a French major at school. And, you know, we met and, you know, you got interested in hacking and you since totally changed your career path and are now a full-time bug bounty hunter. But before you were in, you know, consulting for a little bit as a pen tester, with some companies in Japan. So that's kind of, your history. You've been doing full-time bug bounty for how long now?
For probably, 8 months.
8 months. Okay. And you made that transition from a pretty, well-respected, Japanese consultancy, you know, in Japan. How are you feeling about that transition? Where do you want to be? You know, what are your goals for bug bounty and your security career?
I think so. For the first question of like, how was the transition? I think for one, it was a good transition. The thing I like, so there are things that I like better about bug bounty and like better about, you know, working as full-time pen tester. One thing I really like about being a full-time bug bounty hunter is like, you can always focus on like interesting stuff. Like sometimes as pen tester, you need to, you know,
check. Write those reports or deal with those specific targets that are super, super soft. Yeah.
Yeah. And also sometimes something is not, you see, like you're pretty sure that nothing's there. Like not because you haven't checked, but because there's literally nothing there. But you sometimes have to do some, like, you know, standardized, like, you know.
Yeah, just check the boxes. Yeah.
So that's something I don't have to do anymore. The other thing I like better about bug bounty is that when you're not performing well, you don't get paid. And as a pen tester...
You like that about bug bounty?
I mean, I hate that, but I also like that at the same time.
Yeah.
I hate that. Because as a pen tester, sometimes I don't find good things, but I still get, you know, monthly salary.
Right.
And I feel like, you know, why am I getting paid in the first place?
Right.
Without finding anything.
I feel like that's so informed by a bug bounty first experience. Right? Because if you think about anywhere else in the world, like, you know, or any other job, very often you are paid for your effort. You know, and the business owner absorbs the risk, right? They bet on you. They say, okay, so I think you're a good pen tester. So I'm going to guarantee you some money and I'm going to take on the risk that you're not doing a good job, right? Personally. And I'm going to harvest the upside if you do a good job, right? I'm going to get the margin for that, right? But in bug bounty, it's results for, you know, money for results.
Yeah.
So, but that does fit to your personality a little bit better. I think you like to earn stuff.
Yes.
Yeah.
But that's also something that was something I hate about tester job. But, you know, it's tough to, you know, not to get any money if you don't find anything style. And especially because of, like, the findings are technical. Like, the things I find is, so I mostly focus on client-side bug, like DOM XSS and all, like all of weird stuff. So I usually look for like one-click based account takeover.
Highest impact you can get on the client side.
Right? Yeah, that's the main thing. And I only try to focus on programs that pay one-click ATOs high at least. Because some program pay XSS medium, so I skip those.
Yeah.
Because I don't want to like argue too much. And the problem is like, so last year I found like 60 bugs, like, what I wanted to say,
60 bugs is great, dude.
Yeah. But 60 bugs is, you know, if you split it up, it's like one bug per 6 days.
Yeah.
Sometimes you find like one bug for like 2 days, but sometimes you find one bug for 2 weeks.
Yeah.
And if you like see annually, it's fine because most of them are high. So I can, you know, make my living, and especially in Japan, things are cheap. which seems to be surprising to some people, but
yeah,
so that's fine. But you know, on a daily basis, sometimes it's kind of stressful, right? Because sometimes you don't get paid for like 2 weeks, and like, oh, last 2 weeks I made zero money.
It's stressful, dude. It is stressful. Yeah, so how are you dealing with that stress, and do you feel like that is good, like, well fit to your lifestyle long term, or?
Yeah, that's probably the biggest issue I have right now as a full-time bug bounty hunter. And if I ever want to go back to any sort of full-time job, which I still consider maybe doing, that'd be the reason.
So I guess, let me ask you this. Like, one of the big things that I talk about with my mentees, and I appreciate about my own full-time bug bounty experience, is that I have unlimited freedom. Like, if I, and I utilize that, I mean, you've seen that I'm in and out of this office often during the day, you know, and I'm going to, you know, run some errand or, you know, deal with something, you know, outside or whatever. Like, I utilize that freedom a lot. And I feel like that is really valuable for a lot of people, but I don't know that that is quite as valuable for you, because you do enjoy the journey of hacking so much more than almost anything else in life, right? Like, so do you think you value that freedom? I mean, obviously you use the freedom to look at things that you're interested in, but you don't necessarily value that time freedom, right?
Probably not as much as you do, yeah.
Yeah. So I guess that's one component of, like, should you be a full-time hunter or versus should you go back to, you know, a career at a job?
Yeah.
I guess another factor of that would be the technical intrigue, right? Like you said, you know, being interested in the things that you're hacking. You can always do that as a bug bounty hunter, but you can't always do that at a job unless you're in like a researcher role, right? Have you thought about like doing a researcher like role or anything like that?
Nah, I just feel like, you know, I need to get better at it, get better at hacking more before becoming a researcher is like what I feel right now.
Yeah, I think, you know, our conversations we've had in the past, growth was a big thing for you, right? So, I mean, how do you think your growth trajectory is as a full-time bug bounty hunter versus like being in an environment where perhaps you could be around other hackers that are more senior, more advanced?
At least from my experience, I think being a bug bounty hunter is let me grow faster for sure. Because, you know, I always have this stress or, you know, pressure of I need to
make to get results.
Yeah.
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 So, I mean, it seems like a pretty growth heavy environment, right?
But
why are you thinking about going back to a company?
But this is something that relates to what I said previously, which is I find dome accesses and all thing a lot. Is that, you know, if I value the like part of bug bounty, aspect of bug bounty, of making money, then I have to focus on those things that I know I can find bugs on. Like auth, dome accesses, post message, those things. Like, I'm not super confident finding it anywhere, but I typically end up finding those things. And what happens is, because I need to earn money, I focus on those. And I can't really spend, like, as much time I want on other fields that I'm good at.
Okay, so let's fact check that real quick. Yeah. Okay, so I hear you saying that you feel like you need to earn money because of the stress, but you are also saying, so let me ask this. How does your earnings compare to your cost of living?
It's pretty good.
How does your earnings compare to a salary as a consultant in Japan?
It's better,
Is it like, I guess, well, you don't have to answer this if you don't want to, but can you give a factor to it? You know, can you say like it is 1.2x, 5x, you know, where does it sit at?
I think it obviously depends on like each and every year. But
yeah.
I think last year was like 2x.
Like 2x, yeah. Right? So you've got margin in your bug bounty earnings, right? You can say, I don't have to earn money right now, right? I can go study these vuln types that may not produce results, right? And you know, still pay myself, you know, 5,000 or whatever out of my you know, account, my business bank account each month. Are you doing that right now, or are you just kind of having all of the money pass through
You're just doing that.
Yeah, right? Having no other.
Yeah, dude, it's I don't practice what I preach, to be perfectly honest. Like, to be honest, I do the same thing. But I also don't have a lot of money earning stress. Like, I am confident enough at this point where I'm like, eh, it's gonna be fine. You know, like, so I just kind let it pass through, right? But what I always say to the mentees in the beginning is like, you should, especially if you're worried about it, you should build up a amount of money in your business bank account and then pay yourself a salary each month that is equivalent to, you know, your cost of living plus however much you want to save or whatever, right? Set some low, you know, not super ambitious amount to pull out, you know, each time. And then you can take a month and go study other bone types.
Yeah.
Are you, so you're not doing that. Why aren't you doing that?
I think,
also, let me say, I'm sorry, I know I'm going to be a little bit of an asshole here, but I'm kind of a little bit of an asshole as a mentor. I'm like, oh, okay, so this is your dream. Gotcha. Why aren't you doing that? You know, like that's just a little bit of who I am as a mentor. I don't know. What do you think about that?
I think for financial aspect, if I look my earning on an annual basis, there's actually no concern that I think I have right now.
Right.
So that is why I don't build up that system. But on the other hand, like, I'd say I'm trying to reduce that, like, meaningless concern.
Yeah.
Rather by getting better technically, like getting better at hacking. And if I can, you know, find more bugs, if I can earn more money, if I know I can earn, you know, like you said, I don't necessarily have to earn more money. But if I have more confidence, like you have, and say like, oh, if I lock in for like a week, I can find bugs,
right.
I can get money. And then if I have that confidence, I think I could probably, you know, kind of fix that problem.
Okay.
That's what I'm thinking right now. And that's, you know.
And the way to get to that confidence is what? Do you think that is a skill issue, or do you think that is let me rephrase that.
Yeah.
How do you get to? I'm gonna take the premise that is the solution, which I don't think is the solution, right? But let's just say that is the solution. The steps you should be taking for that is going to be to try to grow as a hacker, right? And you do that by trying new vulnerability types and researching new vulnerability types. But in order to do that, you can't be earning money or at the same pace as you would if you were just searching for DOM XSS and ATL, right? Are you able to do that trade-off? Do you think the concern of not earning money will override your ambitions to grow as a hacker?
I think I maybe not fully, maybe not as much as I want to do, but I'm doing it personally, like as of right now.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, I told you this before too, but you know, the reason why I came visit your place, like what probably the biggest reason, like in terms of hacking is to get better at fields I'm not good at. So if I just wanted to focus on earning money, I probably should have stayed in Japan, you know, in my house, just, you know,
in your dark room hacking all
this. But I was like, you know, for now, if I calm down, see my previous year's earning, like on an annual basis, not take like last five days.
Right.
I'm doing fine.
Yeah.
And if I go visit Justin, then I definitely learn things I'm not good at.
Okay. So you're taking a step towards growth by coming here and trying to absorb some of that.
Yeah. And I did learn some, I'd say many things already here. So yeah.
But yet that's so, but we also were focusing on post message and, you know, XSS bugs. So maybe we need to shift that a little bit. Okay. So, if you can solve this anxiety about the money earning thing and get to a point where you feel pretty confident, no matter what you do a week in, you'll find a bug or that sufficient amount, you know, amount of money or a couple bugs, then is your long-term goal to continue in bug bounty forever? You know, or are you going to try to do something else? Like, is that the kind of lifestyle you want?
I guess I've never seriously thought about like those like long-term thing. I feel like as long as, I mean, obviously with the AI thing, things are changing, but
yeah,
for now, what I'm thinking is as long as I can keep growing as a hacker, and or not even as a hacker, keep growing as a human being and keep learning stuff, not just as hacking, but maybe some other things too. You know, that's
keep growing those muscles like you've been doing in the gym.
Yeah, that's also you know.
Yeah.
Of course, that's a part of it, and if I can feel that, I'm generally happy. Then maybe like in the long run, I might think feel different things in 10 years, 12 years, but that's not my, you know, things to consider right
Something that you're thinking too much about. Okay. So, all right. So summarizing to this point, your goal is to continue growing as a hacker, continue growing as a person. And we don't have any like super mega long-term goals for the time being. And the way you're approaching that growth currently is by coming here, trying to learn via osmosis of us collaborating on bugs and me showing you what I'm finding. And trying to attack new vulnerability types yourself, if you can. And this this main problem with full-time bug bounty and your lifestyle as it currently is this anxiety piece. But you think that will go away if you can continue to grow and gain more confidence as a hacker?
Yeah, so for one thing I want to say...
I'm sitting here smiling at you because Go ahead.
One thing I want to say is not like... Like if I say anxiety, that sounds a little, that sounds way bigger than the thing I have. It's not like anxiety that I always have like every minute or something like that. It's something that I always think of if I think about my career. So it's not too like.
It doesn't affect your life that much, or it does?
Not that much. Like it's not like depressing.
Sure.
Super heavy anxiety. So that's one thing. And so. That is why if I can double my findings, like numbers, I think I'd be in good shape, I guess.
Okay. All right. So, you know, what I'm going to tell you, of course, is that as a hacker with more than double your findings, you know, in the past years, that worry doesn't go away from being better at hacking, right? The worry goes away from getting rid of the worry, you know, like rather than trying to solve it from by trying to skill up. And the way that, I mean, I wish I had more concrete advice for you, you know, besides just kind of give it up to God and be like, I trust that things are going to be fine. But I know that for me, it did help to look at other people that have succeeded and how much risk they've taken in their lives, you know,
like Elon Musk.
Yeah. I mean, like, maybe sure. But like, you know, I'm thinking more of those people that are like, all right, you know what? I'm going to buy, and I've got $60 to my name. I'm going to get a $50 bus ticket to New York City, you know, like those sort of guys. Yeah. Right. And then you've got $10, you know, like, and when you compare it to these people that kind of really put take a lot of risk and still succeed and it's still fine. You look at us with like, I mean, let's just be conservative, 2 years of, you know, salary stored up in the bank. What is the risk, you know? And I don't know. I think it's something that you've got to kind of practice.
Yeah.
Like you have to sit down and you have to practice intentionally being like, no, I am fine. I'm going to practice that. I'm going to practice saying I am, you know, this anxiety is not going to, direct me. This shinpai is not going to, you know, exactly. Is not going to, you know, affect the way that I'm dealing with this. And so I don't know. I would definitely recommend trying to approach that a little bit more from a mental perspective than from a logistics perspective or a hacker growth perspective.
But
I think hacker growth is a great goal and it aligns with your goals anyway. So maybe it'll just solve itself.
Yeah. That's the last thing I wanted to say is, you know, either way, that's my goal. So I'll try to reduce, like get rid of anxiety and try to get better at hacker. I think that's...
Just do them both simultaneously.
Yeah. And then like, hopefully we'll come back to this fall like 2 years later and like, I'm a hacker guru.
Yeah, you know? There you go. That's great, right? And I mean, it's awesome also to look back on, you know, look at where we are at now. And look at where we were, you know, even at this last episode in 2023, you know, you've grown a ton as a hacker since then. And if you compare it to 2021, I think, which is when you started hacking, was it 2021 or was it?
2021.
Yeah. when you started hacking, you know, it's a totally different world. Yeah. Like, I honestly remember you not even really, like, you pretty much just used the computer to write essays.
Yeah.
You know, and, like, log into the portal.
What is Jason?
Exactly. Who is Jason? who is Jason? That's great. But yeah, so that's a lot of growth in a couple of years. And that should be another thing that gives you confidence, you know? Like, in 4 years, you've gone from, you know, not knowing who Jason was, mm-hmm. you know, to the position now where you're able to make double your you know, consultant salary, just doing bug bounty full time and betting on your own skill against these very hardened companies. So mm-hmm. you're in a good spot, man. So mm-hmm. I think you should feel good about that. Let me see if there's anything else that we had on here. We could talk about live hacking events and your experience with that, but to be honest, I think that we should just switch over to Reflector okay. and talk about some of your technical work. Okay. And I don't know, I might put a little segment in before the mentorship side and flip the order of these. I don't know. So we'll see. But Reflector, I guess, is a project you've been working on recently that was a Kaido plugin, and you've made improvements to it. And I kind of just wanted to take a second to kind of go through Reflector, the changes you've made and why you've made those changes and the results that you're seeing from it already. So can you tell us a little bit about the improvements you made?
Yeah, so Reflector is, I forgot whose plugin was it. But
Bebex, I think.
Bebex plugin.
Yeah.
To check Reflected XSS.
Yeah.
So they take like query parameter and body parameter when it's I forgot the
XWW form URL encoded. Yeah, I got it. Yeah.
I haven't yet, but anyway, so they take those values and see if it's reflected on response.
Mm.
And if those values are reflected, they send like single quote, double quote, a bracket. To see if those reflect too.
Okay. And so searching for basic reflected XSS, double quote, single quote, angle bracket.
Yeah, and that's what they do. And I've been using it for like 3-4 months.
Mm-hmm.
I think I found a couple bugs and it's a really good plugin. So I like it. But the thing is, they have a lot of false positives too. So I was like, oh no, they don't have a lot of false positives. They have a lot of false negatives. So
false negatives. Okay.
Yeah. So that's why, last week or 2 weeks ago, I was like, just thought maybe I improve it a little bit to make it work better. And then ended up like spending like a week.
I love, you know, we sat down and we were like sort of brainstormed a little bit on what approach we wanted to use to improve Reflector. And you know, we wrote out the whole algorithm and everything. And then you're like, okay, yeah, I should probably have this done by later today or like tomorrow at the latest. And I was like, yeah, right.
You yes, know, I like, say that every day.
Yeah.
For like 5 days.
Exactly. And it's like, oh, okay. You know, we got just one more day, just a couple bugs to fix. So yeah, major credit to anybody who develops a Kaido plugin or Burp plugin. I mean, it takes a lot of work and it takes a lot of edge case tweaking, you know, to get something working the way you want it to work. So what improvements did you make and what result did that have?
So there are just like 4 or 5 improvements. The first one is just analyze cookie too. Check cookie values too, and if that reflects, then I'll test father. And that's one. The other one, another thing I improved upon is they always send the same payload for any reflection. So they check reflection. If there's any reflection, they send like test payload underscore single quote, double quote, closing bracket. And they send that. And then they check if that reflects. But the problem is sometimes, you know,
That exact string reflects?
Yeah, if that exact string reflects. So maybe some server might not respond if they're bracket, but, you know, like maybe, like for example, within JavaScript context, like script tag context, you might want script tag quote context. You might want either quote to break out of the string or bracket to break
close
out of
the script tag.
Yeah.
Mm.
And maybe server only sanitizes the quote, right? And in that case, if you send like a payload, single quote, double quote, bracket, even when server allows bracket to be reflected, because single quote doesn't reflect, reflector doesn't say it's vulnerable.
Ah, okay. So yeah, so like maybe, or maybe you often see this with entities too, like maybe like a double quote and a single quote, you know, get encoded, get entity encoded or something like that, or URL encoded, but then the angle bracket doesn't, because those single and double quote got entity encoded or whatever. Now the string match fails.
Yeah.
And it's not any, it doesn't find that it was reflected.
Yes, yes.
Ah, okay.
Also, probably another issue they had was they check single quote, double quote. It's not really an issue, but they only check single quote, double quote bracket. So for example, if you have injection point in HTML attribute and without quote, like non-quoted HTML attribute.
Non-quoted HTML attribute. Okay, yeah.
You want either slash or space to break out of the content.
Yes.
Not really break out.
Yeah.
So that's what I wanted to do is, you know, parse the DOM or, you know, just check the DOM before sending payload to see where it reflects. Like if it's in script quote, like quoted script tag, if it's in HTML, if it's an HTML attribute, or if it's in a string within script tag and such. And what I do is I check that and based off of that, generate a payload that includes one of special characters.
Like just one of the special characters.
Just one of script characters.
Okay.
So if you need like two different characters, like within like a string of script tag, you need a quote and script bracket. So I generate two payloads and send them individually. To check the reflection.
Sure.
Yeah, that, so that's like a major thing I modified.
So with that, you end up having to send a lot more requests though, right? If you're just doing one of them at a time.
And I also have to parse response text into DOM. And that gives a little bit more like a...
How did you solve that? Is it causing a lot of overhead?
I'm trying to find a good balance here. And what I'm doing right now is one, I put a rate limiter. So I only send like one request per like 0.5 second of 1 second.
Oh, really? Okay. Interesting. Yeah,
within the plugin. And the other thing is I try to reduce the time the plugin parses the response text. So obviously you need one parse before sending payload because you need context analysis.
Okay, so the normal request passes through the proxy.
Yeah.
You see...
reflection check.
You check the value and you check the response to see if it's reflected.
Yeah.
If it is reflected, you then parse the DOM?
Yeah, I parse the DOM. But actually, there's another step before that. I don't know if it's a good thing to... dive into this
detail. Yeah, no, let's go. We're deep podcast.
Yeah. So before that, I check the value of each parameter value. Because for example, if value is true or false or, you know, undefined, there could be a lot of, you know, in response, there could be a lot of true and false and undefined.
Sure.
So if you just check reflection on string-based comparison, you get a lot of false negatives, false positives.
False positives, yeah.
And since I do a DOM parsing within unserialized HTML.
Yeah.
So if there are too many true, or like if the value is just A, like one length, and if I try to...
Or one or something like that. Oh, jeez.
That'd be so much overhead plus so many false positives. So if I find such like common values or too short values, then I try to send like 10 characters long alphanumeric random value and resend the request for all the parameters that have such like either common or short values and see if response doesn't break. Like for example, if you mess with session cookie and the response 4-3, right? So I need to check that, but anyways, I try to find as many such common values and short values that could be replaced with random values.
To minimize the false positives of like, oh yeah, it reflected from the, you know, is admin parameter, you know, true. And now there's like 50 trues in the body. Okay.
So I do that. And if ever those changes breaks the response, I give up on those parameters.
For now.
Maybe I should work on that. But for now,
it seems to make sense. Yeah,
I give up
on maybe those. There's typing on them or something like that, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then so now I have like normal, maybe not normal, but let's say normal parameter with a long values or not common values.
Sure.
And some others with, you know, generated values.
Mm-hmm.
And I take all of those and then unserialize HTML. And see, unserialize HTML and check where they all reflect.
Mm-hmm.
And see if it's in like script or such. And based off of that, I create a JSON.
So you parse the DOM and you identify where the reflection occurred and you figure out what context it's in.
Yeah.
So if it's an HTML attribute, that's easy. You know, you can just find that. Does the DOM parsing engine that you use tell you what kind of quote is in the
HTML attribute? HTML attribute?
Yeah.
Yes. For that, no, maybe there's a better way, but I don't. The approach I took is I take the value using the attribute value property, and then I check values next to them.
Ah. Yeah. And then you just grab the previous character.
Yeah, and then if it's a single quote, double quote, then that's single.
Easy. Okay. So then you know, you identify, okay, we're in a double quoted HTML attribute context, or we're in a single quoted HTML attribute context, or we're just in, you know, a script or an HTML tag, you know, that sort of environment. And then you define a smart payload specifically for that context.
Yes. And for script tag, you know, you can't do such things of like taking string, right? Mm. As opposed to taking attribute value. So you can't do that with DOM parser. So I just count all these characters from the beginning of script, like text node of the script tag. And then if you verify single quote, now single quote context. Ah. I found double quote, but it's in single quote context. I don't change it. I found escape. So the next character is invalid, even if it's single quote.
Doesn't matter.
So skip it. Single quote. Oh, it's single quote. So it's out of single quote context. Kind of like that.
Wow. So you read through each index of the whole script tag.
Yeah.
Jeez. I feel like that would be pretty intensive. Have you looked at all at your CPU, and is it like freaking out, or is it? I mean,
no. It's been okay.
It's been okay.
Like there's no issue, but maybe thanks to my mom.
Yeah, well, you do have a pretty powerful Mac, yeah. So, okay, so then, you know, the way you figure out, so oftentimes what happens is, like, they'll be like, var, you know, name equals single quote, and then, like, reflection from inside the script tag, right? And whenever we see that, obviously, we're really happy about that. That's, like, a very interesting environment. But you need to know whether we're in a double quote environment, a single, you know, a single quote environment. Do you do the backticks?
Mm-hmm.
You do the backticks as well. Nice. So yeah, like a backtick environment, that sort of thing. And the backticks are interesting because I guess if you're in a backtick environment, you could also do like the dollar sign, a curly bracket thing.
Oh yeah,
and then you could break out. So those become sensitive characters
I'll add that. Yeah.
You know, nah, I just got you more dev time. Mm-hmm. I've never seen a reflection inside of a inside of
that's
a
pretty weird situation.
Yeah, template literal environment. But then, okay, so you identify that, you count the number of strings, you know, double quotes or single quotes that you see, because it should always be even. There should never be an uneven amount unless it's escaped. So that makes sense.
I don't count the number I encounter. I just, hold, like, you know, if I encounter a single quote, I'm like, oh, this is single quote environment.
Okay.
And I do that till my reflection.
That's smart, dude. Yeah. That's a good example of a really like simple and beautiful algorithm to solve a really challenging problem.
I don't know
problem.
Though. Like this is maybe just thanks to my Mac, like I said.
Yeah, so, it could be your Mac just being amazing, but to be honest, it doesn't sound like it should be too intensive.
Maybe.
You know,
maybe
like
not.
Like you anytime you search a string, you go through every index.
Mm.
You know? So I think it's probably it should be roughly O of N, right? I think it should happen linearly, you know, just with just one iteration through. So I don't think that's too computationally complex.
Yeah, I hope so. Yeah.
That's a beautiful solution. So then you avoid having to use like a JavaScript grammar parsing engine.
I don't know. Maybe that's a better way, but I'm not using it for now.
Yeah. No, that's good. That's good. And then, you don't have to do any syntax trees or anything like that. That's good. So then you identify, you know, what characters are sensitive in that environment. You put those in the URL. You know, are you URL encoding or not URL encoding before you send?
Yeah, I encode them. I URL encode them. Yeah.
Okay.
Because usually that's what you have to do, right?
Yeah. I wonder if there's any merit to sending a URL encoded and URL decoded.
Maybe character. Like cache situation is something I was thinking. Like, because then you can just send like an encoded character via proxy. And if that causes some cache issue, but that's not what I'm looking for right now.
No, that's not what you're looking for. I have seen sometimes though, where it's like, if you send a un-URL encoded double quote, it will reflect a URL unencoded double quote. But the problem with that is browsers don't allow that.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's going to get URL encoded anyway, automatically.
Yeah.
I don't know if they, I don't think they allow that in the body parameter either. I think, or in like body parameters.
I don't think so. Yeah.
Okay. So that would kind of trigger some really annoying XSSs because, you know, maybe it does reflect a double quote. But it actually,
and then that happens with the Vivix reflector.
Oh, did it?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
Sometimes I was like, yes, you know, like it happened to me a few times.
And it can't actually be exploited. Wow, that's a pain. Okay, so that seems like an awesome approach. Is there anything, any other improvements that you want to make to it, or any improvements that you made to reflector that, you know, any other improvements that you made that you want to talk about? Or I think that's about it.
Yeah,
that
that's about it. It's not like a too huge over there project. So, yeah.
But I've been surprised by the results. Like, I remember you spent so much time devving it that we've only had about a day to test it before this podcast. And like, you were just navigating to random bug bounty sites and you were seeing boop, boop, boop.
Yeah.
And like, all of these third parties were like popping.
Yeah, so a good thing about it is they don't have too much, like, they don't have false positives pretty much at all. Maybe there are a lot of false negatives. I gotta look into it. But because of that, like when something pops up on findings, I can be like, oh, I'll check it.
I think it would be very hard to have a false negative. You know, I think the way the you've implemented the strategy is like pretty solid. Because I know you're using like a canary on either side, right? You're like sandwiching the payload in a canary as well. So you have high integrity on whether it's actually reflected or not.
Yeah.
So I think you just came up with a pretty solid algorithm, you know, to check for reflections. And then I think one of the things that we saw just yesterday when we were working on it, you know, you popped two third-party XSSs yesterday with this. And those XSSs were in iframes, right? Which is beautiful because you can then use that to as a trusted position against the main app.
I end up finding more OAuth issue then, you know?
yeah, That's true. It does continue to be OAuth issues. Or, you know, maybe you can pivot it to XSS on the main domain via like a trusted post message relationship.
Or that's also client-side XSS though, you know?
Yeah. That's fine. Yeah. Is that what you want to, do you want to move away from client-side stuff then? Is that the TLDR of the situation?
No, I see what.
Because if not, you should have flown to. If so, you should have flown to go see someone else. Because I love client side stuff, man. And not to say that I don't find server side stuff. I do, but I think there's something so beautiful about client side stuff and the change that goes along with it. So, all right, man. I think that's all we had on Reflector. I guess the time has come for me to do the Japanese version of the podcast, huh? All right. Well, じゃ日本語のポッドキャストの時ですね。やば。これが初のエピソードだったら、普通にこの Critical Thinking Bug Bounty Podcast は英語でよくなってるんだけど、俺の夢は日本語でポッドキャストすることです。から頑張って今日日本語でやります。やっぱり普通に俺はホストなんだけど、友達の坂口聡も一緒に今日やります。
ホストします。
で、ちょっとなんか日本語の問題があったら手伝ってください。
もちろん、もちろん。
そうだね。
やるべ。
まあ、いや、let's do it。やりましょうか。
やりますか。
最初の話題は、まあ、やっぱり、英語でこのポッドキャストやってるときに、普通に最初の部分は、ゲストは、
自分の力を証明するために、
そう。
脆弱性発表しないといけない。
発表します。
うん、日本語で。
で、俺が頑張って、日本語で発表します。で、多分大丈夫。大丈夫なら、なんか、多分大丈夫だという理由は、やっぱり、 一緒にハッキングした時に頑張って日本語を使いますね。うん、で、いろいろな、なんか単語を。
確かに。
なんか。
結構あるな。
ちょっとある、ね、うん。結構ってちょっと言い過ぎかもしれないけど、ちょっとだけあります。うん、まあじゃあ頑張ります。うん、今日発表したいの脆弱性は、バグは、最近、コラボレーションで、競争
競争はコンペティションだね。
コンペティションじゃない。そうだね。コラボレーションで、うん見つけたやつ。
協力か。
協力。あ、その言葉だな。あざす、あざす。協力で見つけた脆弱性です。この脆弱性は、XSS になったんだけど、XSS になった、なんか技、方法は面白かったと思ったから発表しようと思った。うんこの脆弱性は、なんか HTML ページにあって、うん、ダム XSS、うんになった、うん。で、なんかこのページの機能性は、なんかページに書いてあったコードは、inner HTML を使ってベースタグを作りました。うんうんで、ベースタグはやっぱり興味深いタグだね。その、なんか他の資源の、resources、そのページの、うん、の resources のベース URL を定義するタグですね。うん、で、それが興味深い。やっぱりなんか二つの興味深いことがありますね。うん、まずは、最初のは、まあ、やっぱり inner HTML を使っていったら、うんうんちょっとなんか、ぴょんぴょんぴょんぴょんなんか、なんか面白い、起きるかもしれない。で、その後はやっぱりベースタグ作ってるから、もう一つの機会があるでしょう。
だから自分のホストから JavaScript ロードするみたいな。
そう、そう。うん、で、あのページ、それに、あのページに、relative resources がありましたから、うん、俺のサイトに向かせていたら、向かせる？
だから相対パスでスクリプト、うん、スクリプトタグとかをロードしてたら、
そう。
その相対パスからあの URL 作るときにベースタグのホストを使うから、
そう。
そこ指定できたら、アクセスです
。二つのの目標がありますね。inner HTML を悪用することや、うん、ベースタグ悪用することだね。で、このベースタグの href が、href にインジェクトしてたんだけど、うん
href の、だからその属性の value っていうか、値にインジェクトした。
うん、そう。で、値に、うん。でもその値の最初のキャラクターは、うん、文字はスラッシュだった。うん、で、relative path になってた。
その値はあれだよね。あの、なんつうのなんつうのやっぱ俺が忘れたわ。
ね、やっぱ大丈夫なんだけど、説明する。
あ、それこうされてるんだよね。
だそなんか、俺たちのインジェクトする、うんところ、うんは、その、ベースタグの href attribute の、うん、スラッシュの後、うん。で、結構緩いね。なんかスラッシュがあるんだけど。
実は俺が思ってたのは、その、例えば、その空白開けてもう一個 html アトリビュート入れるみたいなのはできないってこと？
あ、それできない。うん、ダブルクォート。
うん、なんだっけ？忘れたわ。
いや、あざす。それ、手伝ってくれない。お前。まあ、ダブルクォートはちょっとなんか。
あまあでもダブルクォートか
な。そうだね。ダブルクォートが、うん、使えませんでした。
そう。
それは、まあ、暗号されてるかって。it was encoded.、うん、エンコードされてた。うん、で、ただあのベースタグの href attribute の中を管理することに、
うん。それだけ指定できると。
そう。で、まあ、やっぱり、なんか、スラッシュ一つがあったから、うん、relative path、の、なんか、目標だった、もともと。けど、やっぱ、ハカの頭、アタカの脳みそが、うん、absolute path にすることができます。
絶対パスね。
二つの、のスラッシュを使えば。で、難しいなのは、この、インジェクションところが、location.pathname から、取られてる。
うん、
で、取ったら、スラッシュにスプリットされた。
うん、
で、はいはい、2番目のインデックスに、インデックス
?2 番目の、2番目のパスかな、だから。
2番目のパス、
うん、で、だからつまり、
うん、
一応確認すると、
うん、
まず、お前はそのベースタグの HF の値の中に入れられて、
うん、
で、ただ、全部コントロールしてるわけじゃなくて、もうすでにスラッシュ1個入ってて。
そう。
スラッシュ足す、
スラッシュ多数。
インプット欄。っていうのがまず1個目で、さらにそのインプットがどこから来てるかっていうと、URL のパスから来てて、
そう。
で、そのパス全部取ってるわけじゃなくて、
そう。
パスをまず取って、JavaScript の中で
分けて、
そう、スラッシュで分けて、2個目、
う
ん、だから、そう。2階層目を取って、それをぶち込んでる。
そう。
で、スラッシュは最後のなんか、ベース href に、活かせる
のが目標で。
目標なんだけど、スラッシュにスプリッツされていったら、
そう
されていったから、難しくなりました。
そうだね。
うん、で、さらに、まあ、それを、その状況を分かる、と、すぐ、あ、まあ、バックスラッシュとかを使えば、
そうだね、
ワンちゃん。で、っていう考え方があるんだけど、やっぱり同じ問題があって、location.pathname がブラウザに自動的にノーマライズされてる。
うん、
ノーマライズって英語で言う。
ノーマライズ。
ノーマライズ。
ノーマライズかな。
ノーマライズわかんない、うん。ノーマライズされてる。だよね、うん。で、それもできない。
うん、
残念ながら。で、それがどう、なんかこれがどうやって解いたかっていうと、
うん、
結局、HTML entities に使いましょうと思った。
うん、
けど、なんか俺が HTML entities を使ってるときに、普通にこの形を使ってます。アンパーサンド、
うん、
ハッシュタグ、
うん、
で、hex。
数字がね、
そう。hex のなんか、丸から f までのやつだね。え、で、セミコン、
はいはい。
だね、それが普通になんか使ってるやつ。
そうね。はい、
その理由は、やっぱり、hex 値は分かってる。なんかすぐ、うん、2f とか、
うん
まあ、すぐ分かってる。うん、だね。でもそれが難しくなった理由は、まあ、ハッシュタグをパーツに入れると、うん、フラグメントになりますね。
そうだね、
うん。
で、それがなんか使えなくなってしまった。
うん、
でも、少し調べてから解決を見つけた。
うん、
で、それがアンパサンド、
うん、
sol。
うん
だね、セミコン。
うん、
で、それが、その、HTML entity の別名のアリアスだね。うんうん、で、その、なんか、5つのキャラ、うん、アンパサンドは、
うん、
URL インコードされてない。
うん、
SOL が全部 ASCII なんか普通のアルファニューマリックキャラクターなので、大丈夫。うん、で、セミコンも、
大丈夫。
大丈夫。で、それが直接、
うん、
なんか、
使われて
る直接、inner HTML に入れると、
うん、
これが HTML アチビュートになるから、そうだね、ベースタグが、その HTML を使って、
うん、
スラッシュスラッシュになって、
うん、
俺のサーバーから JavaScript 資源を取られてます。
うん、だから、その、多分パスが、わかんないけど、なんか、
うん
example.com スラッシュアップスラッシュアンパッサン sol セミコロン
そう
ラインレーター .com
ドットコムですね。
でそれがベースタグ入って
そう
あ
なので俺のサイトから
なるね
取ってる、
ね、
で簡単にアクセスゲットすることができます。はい、は
い、
以上で大丈夫だった。なんかだいぶ分かった、
うん、
よかったね。あ、安心した。マジで、
なんか。証明されたな。
むずいね。
ちゃんと、
むずい。
ちゃんとハッカーと証明された。
そう。証明大丈夫？
そう、大丈夫。
いいっすね。はい、ハッカーです、一応。じゃあ、それがそれなんだけど、ちょっとなんか結構、普通にこのポッドキャスト、の話題ではないけど、
うん、
すごくなんか深い技術的な話になるのはやっぱり難しくなるけど、ね
うん
俺が思ったのは今日の話題はちょっと一般的にして、
うん
まあできるだけ深くなるけど、
うん
俺が、ね、ちょっと興味あるのは、
うん、
日本のバグバウンティー産業の状態だね、
うん、
やっぱり海外にいろいろな、なんていううんまあ、会社とかがバグバウンティー会社があったりして、うんでも日本の中でなんか、どういう会社がどういうバグバウンティー文化があるかって聞きたかった、うん、
そうねまあてかそのジャスティンも日本住んでたことあるから分かると思う
けど、うん、ちょっと分かってますけど
まあでもなんかそもそもなんか別に会社も人も全部ひっくるめてなんかあんまりないよなそのバグバウンティーの文化は、
うんうん。
文化あんまなくて。
本当に探せないとはね。
うん。
なんかバグバウンティー文化を見つ
けるそうだね、うん、例えばそのハッカーワンとかなんていうか俺がハッカーワンばっかやってるからそのあんまりインテグリティとか ESU ハックとかバグラードわかんないけど、うん、あんまり日本人はまあ領土とかいるけど、
うん、あさすがにね、
まあだけどそんなたくさんはいなくて、
うん、
でそうね、なんか Facebook とか Google にちょっとたまにやってる、絹川さんとかも。
うん、うん。絹川さん、そう
です。で、まあ、ぼちぼちいて、あと周りの友達とかでも、まあ、知り合いだったらやってる人は何人か強い人、いるぐらい。
うん、
でも、なんか本当にそんぐらいで、まあ、俺が知らないかもしれないけど。
うん、うん。それ人がいて、で、みんなが、ほぼ海外の会社に、
そうだね。
に、
うん。
一名、まあ、最初は、なんか、海外の会社に勤まれてる。
うん、
で、まあ、リオタは、フラットだね。うん、フラットの会社で、彼が日本に勤めてるんだけど、うん、なんか、バックバウンティーだと、海外の会社に集中してるわけですよね。
まあ、そうね。で、一個だけ、うん、イシューハントっていう、なんか、俺あんまり、結構その、VDP が多いから、
ああ、確かに。
お金もらえないプログラム多いから、俺はちゃんと見たことはないけど、イシューハントっていうのが、一応日本のバグバウンティーのプラットフォームであって。
うん。
そこで結構有名な会社、楽天とかが。
あ、楽天が入ってる。
でも楽天もお金払ってないんだよね。楽天も VDP だから。
楽天も VDP なの、
うん、あと、まあ、もう一個、俺これも。
いやそれ残念だな、
う
ん。
そう。
楽天がそんなでかい会社なのに。
お金払ってない。
やば。
で、あと一応サイボーズってなんか俺全然知らないけど、サイボーズっていう会社も自分のバグバウンティープログラムホストしてたりして、多分それが一番、バグバウンティーだったら有名かなっていうぐらい、
うん。
で、あとはもう、例えばハッカーワンにいるさ、ピクシブとか。
うん。うん。あ、そうね。ピクシブがあるんだ、ね。
あと、まあ、なんか ESB ハックとかでもいくつかあるらしいの。聞いたことあるけど。うん、だからあんまり、プラットフォームも、まあ一応あるけど、海外ほどでかくないし。
うん。
やってる会社もそんなに多くないよ
ね。うん。まあ、なるほどね。で、ちょっとなんか聞きたかったのは、やっぱり、俺は少しだけ日本語を話せるんだけど、日本語のサイトをハッキングした、なんか、ハッキングしたいときに、ちょっとなんか、画面がちょっと、なんか言語の問題があるんでしょ、うん、なんか、そのサイトは、ここにクリック踏んで、うん、そのサイトの機能性を分かるのがさらに難しくなる。
そうだね、
で、それが、まあやっぱり俺の言語の問題ではある可能性があるんだけど、
うん、
まあどうもね、なんかサイトをハッキングしてるときに英語のサイトが好き、日本語のサイトが好き、なんかハッカーたちは自分の母国語の言語のサイトを使ってるサイト、
うん、
ハッキングすることが一番いいですかっていう質問を聞きたかった。
それは結構なんかおもろくて。っていうのは、うん、例えば、その日本の会社がもっとたくさんバグバウンティーやってくれたらさ、
うん、
その日本人じゃないと登録できなかったりしたらさ、
うん、
俺らに有利じゃん。例えば、なんか日本のマイナンバーないといけないとか、
そう。
日本の住所とか電話番号とかあったら有利だから、それはもちろん嬉しいんだけど、ただ、結構めんどいのが、サイトが日本語だと、その、例えばさ、その、ランゲージヘッダーがジャパニーズにして、うんうん、したら、レスポンスのエラーとかが、全部さ、URL エンコードされた
英語とかになって。確かに読みにくくなる。そう。
だから俺は、普段は全部英語に変えてやってるし、多分、そういう人が多いんじゃないかな。その、読むの大変だから。
なるほどね。
多いんじゃないかなと思うけど、確かに、お前の言ったことはちょっと外れるけど、その、日本人しか使えないサイトとか、日本人がだから登録できる会社とかがあったら、うん、まあ有利だよなっていうか、その点やっぱ羨ましいよな、アメリカとか。めっちゃ会社あるから。
うん、うん。うん、なるほどね、うん。それは思いつかなかったね。うん、日本語がユニコを使ってるから。
バカだるい。
マジだるいね。
バカだるい。
それよ。なるほどね。で、他の言語だったら、例えばフランス語とか英語じゃなくても、
うん、
まあ、アスキー使ってるから大丈夫なんだけど、うん、まあ、だいぶ英語、アスキー使ってるんだけど、
終わりで。
そうだね。それは難しいね。なんか中国語と日本語と韓国語とか、うん、難しくなるね。残念。
うん、
で、っていうわけで、まあ、他の理由はあるかもしれないけど、 っていうわけで普通に英語でハッキングしてるね。
うん、そうだね。
あ、で日本人的にね、まあ英語能力低いやったらちょっとハッキングがやりにくくなるね。結構。
そうだね。まあ、うん、あとなんかそれもあるし、あと結局その言語のことで言うんだったら、やっぱ一番でかいのはドキュメントとかがさ、
うん、
全部英語基本英語だし。まあ一応なんか今 AI とかあるから日本語に訳せるけど、
うん、
その英語のドキュメントを日本語に訳すと死ぬほど読みにくいん
だ。ああ、なるほどね。わかりにくくなる。
うん、わかりにくくなる。やっぱその技術的な単語とかたくさん入ってるし、言い方とかもちょっと特殊だったりするじゃん。だから、俺は日本語の方がもちろん、日本語母国語だから、日本語の方が全然得意だけど、ドキュメントは英語のまま翻訳せずに英語のまま読んだりするし、うん、やっぱ結局、なんか日本の会社がやってないっていうこと以上に、もうなんかあらゆる面で、英語できた方が楽っちゃ楽だと思う。
なるほどね。なるほどね。で、いろいろな言語の問題があるんでしょ
う、うん、
なるほどね。まあ、じゃあ、それはそれなんだけど、英語が必要。
いや、まあそういうことになるな。
そうですね。うん、じゃあ、他の話題は、何があったんだっけ
か、まあだからそう、その話で、
うん、
その話で繋げて言うと、なんか、まあどうだろう。英語が必要だから、バグバウンティーに入ってる人が少ないっていうのもあるかもしんないし、
そう。
ただなんか、俺がなんかこれもう一個、話したかったなと思ってたのは、なんか、日本って CTF 強い人結構たくさんいると思う、
ね。確かにね、確かに強い。
で、俺もその前の会社とかで、その CTF の文化とかすげえ、前の会社、
うん、
そのイエラーってとこにいたんだけど、
うん、
CTF の文化とかすごいあって、なんか、まあそんないろんな人と話したわけじゃないけど、
うん、
すげえなみたいな。そのイエラーにいた人が作った CTF の問題とか見たり、
うん、
成績見たら、やっぱバケモンがいるけど、なんかそういう人がなんかあんまりバグバウンティーに興味を示さないみたいな。
なんでだろうか、あれ。
で、それはわかんなくて、
うん、
なんか一個は、なんかバグバウンティーが結構、サブドメイン集めて、なんか、っていうゲームだと思われているところはあるかなって。なんか結構さ、CTF みたいにさ、特にクライアントサイドとかだとさ、
うん、
CTF みたいにめちゃくちゃいろいろつなげて。
そう、あの人はただ不覚になり、
そう、
に行きたいね。
そういうのもあるじゃん。でもなんかそういうのもあんま知られてなくて、多分。なんかバグバウンティーって言うとそういうなんか、オートメーションでサブドメイン見つけて
みたい
な。なんかそういうのがあるか、まあ、とにかくなんか、話長くなっちゃったけど、
うん。
なんか俺の言いたかったこととしては、なんか全体的な印象として、なんかバグバウンティーは、なんか競争が激しくてむずいからやんないみたいな。うん、まあ確かに競争はある。
いや、まあ、競争はあるんだけど、うん、そうだね。いろんな理由が、あるんだね。
うん、でも CTF の方がむずくねって。
いや、でも、あの印象が面白かったよ。なんか、外交から、外交、outside?
うん。
なんそう、外交から。
ああ、外国
外国じゃないけど、はいはい、the outer side,、the outside of the bug bounty industry.
ああ、外側？
あ、そう、まあまあ、その役か。あのね、外側から見ると、まあやっぱり、なんか、today's new とか doxing とか、
うん、
この、
go Diego。
go Diego とか、めちゃくちゃアルメーション強いの墓たちが、めちゃくちゃ稼いでるし、達成してるし、
うん、
you know、そんなイメージがあるんだけど、他の人は、なんか、バグバウンティー産業の中、じゃないの人は、多分理解してる、理解してないのは、
うん、
そうだね、バグバウンティーがめちゃくちゃ深くなるね。なんか、めちゃくちゃ深くいける、
うん。
で、ただメインアプリを行って、そのメインアプリの技術を、なんか攻撃して、
うん、
なんか、このリカンをせずに、アルミーションせずに、
うん、
攻撃できる。
うん、
で、結構、で、そういう戦略で、人がめちゃくちゃお金稼ぐ。
てか、お前そうだよな。
そうだよ。俺もそうだね。
お前オートメーションしてないもんね、ほぼ。
そうだね。昔、ちょっとなんか、アルメーションとかリコンをやってたんだけど、今、だいぶアプリを選んで、
うん、
深く行って、
うん、
脆弱性見つけることになります、うん。うん。で、それが面白い。でも、そうだね。CTF の人は、すごく能力があるんだけど、別のゲームだね。別の状況だね。うん、なぜなら CTF はいつも解決があります。
うん、
で、バグバウンティーをなんか成功するのは、これ を攻撃しないとか、うん、置いといて、他のことに攻撃するかの、うん、なんか質問になります、
ね。確かに。
正解が。それがちょっと言いにくかったんだけど、分かった。分かってるかもしれないけど。
正解があるとは限らないから、
うん、
なんか無理そうだったら、あ、これいけそうっていうのと、うん、これはちょっと無理だろうなって
、
匂い、匂いを。
無理かどうかを見極めることがすごく難しい。だね。で、なんか、バグバウンティーハンターが、そんなことを、なんか完璧にやってるわけじゃないけど、
うん、
絶対なんか韓国が、
うん、
感覚が必要だね。それ、それせずにやると、本当に無理な問題、
ね、
深く言って、
う
ん、めちゃくちゃ時間を、うん、無駄にする。
あともう一個、なんかそれ、また話長くなっちゃうけど、
うん、
なんかもう一個、それに関して最近思ったのは、その、それこそりょうたと話してて思ったんだけど、
うん、
なんかバグバウンティーだと、CTF で多分、一個違うなと思うのは、なんか割と面白くなさそうだったり、しょうもない機能とかでも、一応触った方がバグバウンティーだと、有利になることが多いと俺は思ってて、
うん、
それを触ることで、あ、他にこんな機能あったんだとか、
うん、
この機能につながってるこういうのがあるとか、
うん、
この機能こういう風なデザインってことは、じゃ別のところでこういうことできたら、そういうさ、なんかアプリを触れば触るほど知識が増えて、
うん、
いろいろ思いつくようになるじゃん。CTF は一個こう穴を見つけたら、それをこうドルルルって掘っていけばいいから、
深く行って、
そこでなんかいろんなもの見て、このアプリ全体が、その一個の穴じゃなくてアプリ全体が、なんか、どういう動きしてるのかみたいなのを分かった方が、なんか思わぬところに見つかったりするみたいな。そこはちょっと違うかも。
それ絶対違う。ね。なんか、一つの、で、たまに CTF そんなことがある
んだ。そうなんだ。
なんか脱線させるやつとか、うん、があるんだけど、それが結構、珍しくて、
うん、
普通にブルルル深く行って、うん、目標だね、CTF は、うん。で、もう一つの残念なのは、まあ、バグバウンティーをやると CTF を参加することが難しくなる。うん、これか、なんでこれやってんだろう、お金もらわないで。なんか、ドーパミンがどこだろうなんか、みたいな、考え方になってしまうけど、
そうだね。
まだまだ面白いけど、よく CTF のライトアップとかを、記事とかを読んだりしてるんだけど、
マジで勉強になる。
参加することが、ちょっとだるくなって
しまう。そうだね。確かにライトアップは読むよな。なんか勉強になるし、スイアップすげえな、うん。ただ参加するなら15時間かけてフラグ取っても0円みたいな。
その10時間ぐらいどんな脆弱性を見つける可能性があったか。あ、やば。で、CTF が好きだったらバグバウンティー参加しないでください。難しくなる。
俺だ。
そうだね。CTF が好きじゃなくなってしまう。そうだね。まあ、それがそれなんだけどよ。
うん、
あ、まあ、今、なんか俺の夢が達成されてますね。
うん、
結構、なんかパッドキャストは。
結構できてる。
結構できてる。この残ってる話題は、
うん、
いや、今しなくて、例えばなんか、一つの話題は、日本のバグバウンティの税金の効率適正、
うん。
で、それは絶対、そんなことについて語りたいんだけど、
うん、
いや、言葉が難しくなる
でしょ。難しいよ。俺正直、自分の税金はあんまり効率よくないと思ってるから。
ああ、な
る
ほ
どね。本当に興味あるんだったら。
調べてない？
いや、ちゃんとやった方がいいよな。めんどくさいもん。
なんか、
あ、まあ、でも
税金の人と相談したの。
ああ、した、税理士ね。
うん。
そう。
そんな語彙が必要。税理士、
ね、
税理士。
そう。に話したし、でもなんかそんなに、なんつうのかな。なんか、ずるいことっていうか、うまいことはしてなくて。
そう。
別に普通に払ってる感じ。
そう。
最悪。
なるほどね。なんか、こういう風にやってます、みたいな。あ、なるほどね。まあ、それが残念な
ので。あんまり日本だと、その、個人事業主、そこまで優遇されてないから。
うん。いや、アメリカだと結構なんか戦略を実現できたら、ね、結構お金できる。
まあでも多分会社作ったらちょっと話変わると思う。
うん。
けど。
まだ作ってないの？
作ってないです。
ああ、残念だな。
うん、
いや、それが
見つかる。それ、まあやんないといけないだから。実際。
まあ、なるほどね。
うん。
まあ、終わりに、絶対、さらにバグバウンティについての、ポッドキャストとか、は聞きたければ、絶対バグバウンティ JP ポッドキャストに聞いてください。 なんか、そいつら、そうが一人なんだけど、リオタ君と森岡、さんと、マスと絹川さん。
あ、で、絹川さんは前回しただけで。
あ、それ聞いただけだよ。
ゲストだった。
なるほどね。昨日の夜聞いてたんだけど、ビビってた。
なんで？
なんか、日本語難しすぎて、まあやっぱりなんかネイティブな人だったら、ね、ネイティブからネイティブまで話していったら、やばい難しい。
いや、待って、あとまあ、りょうた。
あ、いや、りょうた、あいつ、日本語わかんないよね、うん。
あいつ早いし、あと、めちゃくちゃむずいから。
そうだね。めっちゃ複雑な言葉を使ったりしてるね。
う
ん、
そうだな、
まあ。頭がいいからね、あいつ。なるほどね。まあ、今回聞いてくれてありがとうございます。多分、未来に、将来に、頑張って、なんか1個、2個、もう1回、日本語、頑張りますけど、いや、まあ、今回、俺の夢が達成されて、すごく嬉しいです。ありがとうございます。ありがとうございます。じゃあね。And that's a wrap on this episode of Critical Thinking. Thanks so much for watching to the end, y'all. If you want more Critical Thinking content, or if you want to support the show, head over to ctbb.show/discord. You can hop in the community. There's lots of great high-level hacking discussion happening there, on top of masterclasses, hackalongs, exclusive content, and a full-time hunter's guild if you're a full-time hunter. It's a great time, trust me. All right, I'll see you there.